woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Greg Pappas on the board on this 5th of July. S&P futures up 1, NASDAQ futures up 33. Of course, they have to be up. They're up every day, which is fine. Today, Tesla up another 360. Tesla's up, what is it up? It's up 25% in like a week or two, or 20%. It's not sure how that works, but did everybody have a nice 4th? Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning. Yes, you have me.
How are you? What's the good word, well, bud?
What's the good word? I don't have any good words. I'm crotchety old man today. Can I do that?
Well, yeah. We also have Mr. Murphy.
Yeah, so we'll let Mike be the nice guy today.
We have General Murphy, Colonel Murphy, whatever he is. He's a high up there. High ranking.
Yeah,
dude.
Good morning, Tom.
How are you?
It's Major Retired Murphy. Okay.
Well, Major's that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's okay. You're right.
Well, I mean, what the heck? It's better than I got. did I even make it the buck private? I don't know. Is there such a thing as a buck private or is it just a private?
No, there's a buck private.
Okay. How bad is he? He's not even a private yet?
He's the lowest on the... No, he's a private, but they just call him Buck Privates, that's all.
Oh, God. Okay, that can't be a good name. Kevin sent this thing on the services industry. We have Mike on to talk about everything, but mainly to talk about some soccer. But just a couple of things. You know what yesterday was the 100th anniversary of? Now, Greg should know this. It was obviously our nation's birthday.
Greek independence, who knows?
It's the 100th anniversary of the Caesar salad.
Well, Greg doesn't have anything to do with the Caesar salad.
No, but he's a restaurant sort of guy.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't know you put Worcestershire in there. Worcestershire, eggs, lemon, anchovy. A lot of stuff goes in it.
Worcestershire and everything.
Well, some people do, yeah. Some people use A1 on everything, too. Ugh.
I don't know about it. I agree.
We had guys
or ketchup, right?
What's the hot sauce? The yellow, orange stuff. Tabasco.
Tabasco.
Yeah, we had all kinds of guys on the board that threw Tabasco on their tuna fish sandwiches. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I like that much. But so on the way in this morning, I drive in from Orland, right? Figuring there's not gonna be any traffic, and of course there isn't. But I'm driving on LaGrange Road. I see all these squad cars and a big wrecker ahead of me. I'm thinking this can't be good. So I pull up and I see this car just decimated. And plus, it hit the rail. It's like it's kind of an odd angle. Of course, hits right on the driver's side. Now, the guy or lady had all these airbags, so they were in the car with all that stuff, so maybe somebody survived. I'm thinking, how the hell did they hit like that? Turns out it came across the median from the other side and whacked into the thing. It's some massive high speed, all these skid marks. And still, the thing had to hit it like 90 miles an hour. I'm thinking, somebody didn't have a good night. What the hell? And then I hear about, we had two mass shootings yesterday, Greg. Two people were shooting each other and hit 8 other people. And then some people showed up in front of a house, got out with a rifle and other stuff, just started pouring lead into the house. But they killed 2 ladies, and now one of the kids died. There's just women and kids in there, not even any guys. This is in the last 24 hours. We had an 8-lot shooting and then a 5-lot or something. Anybody thinks this is getting any better here?
What did I say when we were talking yesterday? We are a sick country.
We are. This is so sick, it's scary. I don't even... Did you guys... I just sent you something about this Brazil ex-president.
Yeah.
This thing is a riot. It's absolutely a riot. But get a load of this. It's so, he's their conservative guy. He ran. He won kind of in an upset. You know, little parallel here. Now they're going after the guy for accepting watches and diamonds from the Saudi government and then selling them.
And then selling them, yes.
Yeah. No, but get a load of this.
They called them undeclared.
Yeah. Now, this, get a load of this. Last year, Brazil's top electoral court, they have an electoral court, whatever that means, ruled that Bolsonaro abused his presidential powers during his 2022 reelection bid. I'm not going to say it. I'm just saying this sounds, which rendered him ineligible for any elections until 2030. The case focused on a meeting during which Bolsonaro used government staffers, state television channel, and the presidential palace in Brasilia to tell foreign ambassadors that the country's electronic voting system was rigged. Does that sound familiar or what? God. So, but how do you end up, how do you get an electoral court? What does that mean? I can only imagine who's on that thing.
Well, you'd have to go, we'd have to go read the Brazilian law and constitution and all of that kind of stuff, and I'm probably not going to want to do it.
But no, no.
You should do it and report back.
And you know what? That sounds like a job for Greg. What do you think? I like the part about getting the diamond. Plus, they have a law in Brazil that if you, he must not have Air Force One, right? Not many places do. I think even
generally he doesn't. But yeah, okay.
Doesn't the Prime Minister of Britain just fly first class on a regular commercial?
Don't know.
I think he might. Anyway, if you, they have a tax here, which is really something. If you come in with something, investigation showed that Bolsonaro's former aide allegedly falsified his COVID-19 records. Whatever the hell that means. Sold a Rolex watch and a Patek Philippe watch. I don't even know what that is. For $68,000, they were gifted by Saudi's government in 2019. But evidently, if you come into Brazil from someplace, and you've got something that's really really valuable, you got somewhere else, you owe them 50% tax.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Police said that Bolsonaro received cash from the $70,000 sale of two luxury watches. Brazil requires that citizens arriving by plane from abroad to declare goods worth more than $1,000, and for any amount above that exemption, pay tax equal to 50% of their value. What the hell is that? I don't think we want to do that. All right, Mike, how about taking us to soccer? We got in the tournament because we're the host country and we're already out here.
Oh, you mean Copa America?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't very good this year. They had no offense. So, and I would say either Argentina, Colombia, and I haven't followed Copa America very closely. I was only looking to see the results of the U.S. games. So,
what is the connection, if any, between the World Cup team they're always kind of working on, this team and the Olympic team? Is there any?
Well, the Olympic team is usually younger soccer players. The World Cup team, these guys, the people that were playing in Copa America, essentially form the core of the World Cup team. It's you know, he makes minor changes, and I'm not sure whether that Greg Berhalter is going to continue to be the coach. There's a lot of rumors about him. He's trying to make sure that he stays the coach, but I think that the U.S., they'll probably switch to somebody else. But they form the core of the World Cup team. That's what the guys that just played in this tournament in Copa America.
So if he stays, he will be the World Cup coach.
That's correct. And okay. He was the World Cup coach the last time, too.
You know, this is where all the guys that have all the different teams they might play in Britain or other places, they all go back to their home countries and play for this thing?
That's correct. That's it's the World Cup. But the same thing, they take a break in the summertime for, the, you know, whether they're friendly exhibitions, whether they're tournaments. But this is the big tournament summer, just like what's going on in Europe right now.
So is that like halfway to the World Cup, 2 years, they have this
big... That's correct. That's exactly right.
Well, I mean, all my nephews are watching, and a lot of people, you know, that you've met when you've been in town, they all love it. When my German buddy, boy, they've taken days off to watch Germany play.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think Germany's going to get their comeuppance today. We'll see what happens.
Who are they playing today?
Spain is a very talented team. And they have a 16-year-old player, actually, that's starting for them.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And he turned 17, I think, the day before the finals of the Euro Cup. So,
Is he a big kid or just, like, real fast or just... Or
no, he's very quick, and he passes very well. And we'll see how things work out.
So he's like a young Pele.
Well, I think, yes, actually like a young Pele.
Well, has there been anybody that good since him?
Oh, it's not consistently, although Ronaldo on Portugal has been pretty good. He's in his fifth Euro Cup tournament, he's in his sixth Euro Cup tournament, and he's played in five World Cups, and he's trying to make it to the next World Cup. And he missed a penalty the other day that would have clinched it for Portugal, although they did win the game. But he's a big goal scorer. He wants to, he really likes to go after goals, and he blew a penalty the other day, but they still made it to their next round. So
if you blow a penalty, it just means the goalie happens to guess right? Correct? Or?
Well, that's correct. But, you know, and it's really ironic because in the penalty shootout, or in the shootout, the Portuguese goalie blocked three in a row, and that was phenomenal. He guessed right every time. And the I forget who Portugal was playing, but their goalie was supposed to be one of the best in the world, and that guy, the Portuguese, got three past him right away. But he did guess right when he stopped Ronaldo's penalty.
But I mean it looks obviously really simple from somebody who's never played it, but it looks to me like they only miss a penalty kick if they like miss the goal or they like hit the guy.
Well, sometimes it is totally a mind game, and a lot of times the goalies psych out the shooters.
But I've seen guys like shoot for the corner and miss the corner.
Correct. Yeah, and a lot of times they go over too. So,
let's go back to what Mike just said. Is you're really trying to hockey goalies do this too? That when you have a breakaway, is you want to give them a place to shoot and then take it away from them.
And that's exactly what they do. But in a penalty shootout, it's a little more difficult because the goal is.
The goal's so big. It's hard, but that's the technique that they're trying to pull off there, is to say, bait him into shooting a certain way. Either that or you have to read which way the guy's going to shoot, and that's darn near impossible because these guys are really good at it. And like Mike just said, you have to cover so much ground anyway that it is just totally in favor of the kicker. And the, it is really, really hard on a goalie. But when you come up with one or two saves in penalty kick situation, man, you just won the game for your team.
Well, didn't right. Mike, how big is the goal, just for people who never played soccer? I mean, it's really big, right? Is it as big as
it's not all that big, Tom. I'm not sure how big it is. I think it's at least 10 foot tall, maybe even 12. And I bet you it's 18 feet it's meters. So it's probably... 3 or 4 meters tall and probably 6 to 7 wide. That would be about 18, 20 feet. Yeah, I would say that's about right.
Well, is it narrower or wider than a goalpost, or about the same?
I would say it's about the same as a goalpost, width-wise, anyways.
Well, yeah, that's pretty friggin' wide for some guy to cover.
Well, but they cut down on angles, and they have their teammates to help, and it's the corner kicks. So the set pieces, corner kicks are tough to defend. Sometimes it depends on how good the guy kicking from the corner is, or gal, doesn't matter. And usually the goalies are pretty tall too, so that they can cover the top of or the higher points of the net, but the lower parts is what where it gets sometimes difficult. So
well, the goalies can be they're like the most physical spot, right? Because they can like shove guys out of the way and stuff.
No, all of European football is very physical. If you notice, they're pulling guys down all the time from all over the field.
Are they supposed to do that, or is that just?
No, it's not. It's not supposed to. But it's, there are some, you know, tackling is allowed, and tackling is, you know, getting the ball cleanly from an opponent, and that's what the defensive players are for.
Well, if you slide into them and you get the ball, you can hit the guy too, right?
That's correct, but you usually have to hit the ball first. I think you do have to hit the ball first.
I think you do, too. But, so what do you like in Europe?
Well, I like Spain against Germany. That's the first game today. And the second game will probably be one of the better games of the whole tournament. It's Portugal versus France. And that's essentially a toss-up. And Mbappe is playing, but he's not playing all that well because of that the mask that he's wearing. I think he's having some difficulty breathing, but I, you know, you never know who shows up for France. And Portugal, after their win the other day, it was actually against Slovenia. And
now these people are all from Slovenia, and they have enough. Obviously, soccer is a big sport. There's enough people in Slovenia to they have a team this good.
Yep. Well, their goalie helped carry them, and I think he plays in the English Premier League. So
okay.
Portugal, I think, will beat France today. I think France just isn't up to snuff this time. We'll see. But I mean, I picked France in the World Cup too, and they lost, you know, in a close game to Argentina when Messi. When the Argentinians had a phenomenal game. So.
Well, Messi's not playing anywhere in this thing, is he?
Oh yeah, he's in the Copa America.
Oh, okay, he's on this side.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And they keep advancing, I think. So we'll see what happens. And then Saturday, the games are Switzerland against England, and I think Switzerland will beat England. And then the Netherlands will probably beat Turkey. Although Turkey, to me, is a surprise team, but I haven't been able to watch them yet. And the Netherlands is usually consistently pretty good. My four picks would be Spain, Portugal, Switzerland, and the Netherlands.
Well, I have, obviously, since I've learned more about it from you, thankfully, I mean, I'm getting a little more appreciation for it, but it's sort of when these guys get if somebody scores early or if they get a two-goal lead, it seems like the rest of the game it's real easy to play keep away. It's almost like the four corners in basketball. Isn't it, or am I just being judgmental?
Well, that's what the Italians, that was the type of game that they used to play all the time. But actually, fortunately, sometimes when a team gets up, particularly when it's the upstart team, if they get up a goal, then that forces the favorite to play a more aggressive soccer. And that usually makes the game much more interesting. The other thing I really like about European football is, you know, once the half starts, there's no breaks in the game other than kind of the nonsense breaks where somebody gets injured or whatever. It's 45 minutes or really more like 50 minutes of straight action. Then they go into a short halftime, then they come out for another 50 minutes of action. So, you know, very few commercials, which to me is ruining both the pro football game and the college football game.
Oh, it's burying the college. I mean, whatever, it seems like it's burying the college game. I mean, to me it does, but...
Yeah. It ruins in person more than it ruins the TV viewer, because you can, you know, get up, do something, you know, go up and, you know, go to the fridge or the bathroom or whatever you want to do. You can do that. You go to a football stadium and you spend so much downtime in there. It's horrible.
Yeah, you're right, Kevin, because when I went to the last, well, it wasn't the last one, but the last Virginia Tech Notre Dame game, I went to. It was at Tech, and all I did was watch the clock guy during the timeouts to see how much longer we had.
So. My cousin used to have, well, I think he still has them and sells them to our buddy Dak, but got Bear tickets, and used to drag me to all the crummy weather games because I was the only one that would go with him, basically. So we go to this one game, and guys, it couldn't have been 12 degrees. I mean, it wasn't snowing or anything, but it was. So the Bears, they were horrible at the time. I don't know if they've gotten much better. The second half starts, and the Bears get the ball. Of course, you got to wait through halftime. So the Bears get the ball. They go the quickest three and out ever by three passes, right? So the maybe 30 seconds comes off the clock. They punt. The other guys throw an interception. So now there's another break. The Bears will go three and out again, like real quick. Then there's a break. Then the other guys fumble, and then the Bears fumble. It was like, it couldn't have been 2.5 minutes off the clock, and it was like 15 minutes. I'm sitting there going, this is going to be a long day. And it was. Because every time there's a ball change or change of position, even if it's one play, they go for a 3-minute commercial, right?
Yeah, well, the one thing that they have done that's positive is they've gotten rid of the before and after the kickoff commercials.
Really?
Yeah, those used to drive me nuts. You know, where you somebody scores a touchdown, you take a commercial break, then you kick off. They, you know, return whatever they're going to do. Maybe they don't even return it. We'll be back after these messages.
Well, I remember Monday Night Football way back in the day. Mike, I don't know if you remember this. When was the first Monday Night Football game?
It's when we were at Notre Dame and the Browns beat the Jets on a last-minute interception by Bob Matheson.
And
we
were freshmen.
1969.
No, we were freshmen.
Freshmen.
Well, so it was 70.
So 70, right.
Yeah, you're pretty close. But I remember when those guys, the game started, it started at 8 o'clock then, and you'd get there and it was the music, which was pretty cool. They introduced the three guys in the yellow coat, go to commercial, and they come back, and the ball was in the air at like 8:02. That doesn't happen now. I mean, they got
no. They've got 15 minutes of prelims.
So. Now, Mike, is there a host in Europe, or is it all over the place?
No, this tournament it varies, but this year it's in Germany. That's one of the reasons why the Germans are doing pretty well too. The Germans have a younger team. They have some older core players. But they also have an exciting guy, this Musiala, who I believe plays for Bayern Munich. But they're doing okay also. We'll see how – I mean, I might be wrong, so we'll see. But and I'm not sure where they're playing. They're playing in all the major cities of Germany. They're playing all over. So for some reason, I think they might be in Stuttgart, but I might be wrong about that.
Now, when you gamble on soccer, not that anybody ever would, right, is it just who wins? Or, I mean, the goals are so tight, there can't be goal advantages, are there, or are there?
There might be, and in, England, they run the big pools, and they probably do the same thing in Germany, but I know they do it in England, and it's always based on, like, 5 or 10 games, and there you have to pick the winners in the games, or you pick a draw. You know, that's the thing about soccer. You always have the draws come into play.
Well, that's right. So there isn't always a winner. I mean,
that's correct.
What happens in Italian football? If you bet the money line, you must get your money back. Right? Is that a push? It's got to be.
I'm not sure, Tom. But because they do pools, it probably doesn't push. You know, I mean, they're betting on 3 games, 5 games. I'm not sure that they can bet on 1 game. I never bet on any European football, so I don't know.
Well, my young ladies downstairs in the bar in the building, one of them, I don't know, was it the Super Bowl? What was the Super Bowl last year or the year before? It went to overtime, right?
I think it was last year, actually, went to overtime.
Well, now the big question was, and I'm not a Mr. Pool guy or anything, because the best thing you can do is get me in a pool because I never win. So you've just basically increased everybody else's chances, right?
So, thank you for the donation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So one of the girls had they played by quarter, paid quarter, and they played final. And she had the numbers at the end of the fourth quarter, and she didn't get paid. And she was asking
me.
Well,
that wasn't the final score.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I said I, I don't know if you count that as a, I didn't know the answer. I mean, whether you counted that as a quarter.
The way you do, yeah, you could. That's how you'd have to set it up. Is, you know, if you set it up for three quarters and final score, then that's what you get. If you set it up for two payouts at the end, quarter and you could. There's a way to do that. You know, there's a way to double it up so that you allow for overtime. You know, if the final score pays off 1/4 of it, then, you know, pay 15 and 10 for the, you know, pay 15 for the final, 10 for the fourth quarter, something like that. And then, you know, you could engineer it. You could make it work.
The Mike, I don't know if you had a chance to listen last week. We were having a nice discussion coming from Kevin and I and actually and Lou about all these Supreme Court decisions. And it had nothing to do with the decisions. You know, I think all of us kind of think most of the decisions are pretty good, actually. Just had to do with different states of the current legal system and whether or not it's going to kind of do any good. And on one stage, on one end, you have Lou saying, well, he's got all kinds of ammunition now if he gets a case. And if it's something's egregious, he thinks he can use these decisions to win a case easier. And there's no, I don't think there's any argument there. And Kevin, I think, is somewhat in the middle, not talking for him. And I'm at the end where this stuff is so egregious to anybody that it's not going to make any difference. No administrative law judge is getting fired today or anything like that. And it's funny, Kevin, last night I called my, wished happy fourth to my cousin in Columbus. And I guess he might have been listening or something. He's a great guy. And well, they owned a couple of building now where student housing is for Ohio State, and they've owned it for like forever. And he can't wait to get out of it, even though his wife evidently still wants to keep him or something. So he's telling me some story that they're still involved in regarding having a dumpster there or something, and how they're embroiled in this administrative law thing with the dumpster laws. whoever does the garbage, and how the fine's up to like $2,000, and they don't even know. He goes, they can't even point the law. I mean, this is much more invasive than certainly Lou thinks.
It's not going to make all the intrusive stuff go away. Remember, this is deference to expertise out of the and interpretations out of the administrative state, and it doesn't mean that there are no administrative there's no administrative enforcement of the laws. Just depends on how clear the law is and how it's interpreted, and that, you know, that the value of the Chevron decision, I think, is that it said you have to go by what the law says. You can't just make stuff up, and if it's vague, then that should get thrown back to Congress.
Yeah, I agree. I just say that I think my view of how intrusive this, maybe just because of the industry I'm in, you know, it is so intrusive. I don't see any of these guys getting canned anytime soon.
Well, they're not going to get canned, and they're going to push it to the limits anyway. They're just going to lose more often in court.
Yeah, well, I was talking to yesterday on my cousin. He goes, actually my mother's cousin, but he says, yeah, you know, I guess we could fight this all the way through to court, but I can't find anybody for less than $400 an hour. How am I going to pay that? It's 5 hours and it's the fine, you know, so I might as well just pay the fine. Even though I don't know what the fine is for.
That's a bit ironic, but that's the way lawyers have our tort society or whatever it is.
Well, I mean, I don't expect anybody to work for free. I mean, obviously, unless it's a terrific case or something where he's getting money out of it. But anyway, we have to dash to break. SP Futures up 75 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 28. We've got the labor numbers today, which is a little odd on the day when not many people are around, but that this is July 5th, the first Friday of the month, which is when the labor numbers usually come out. Sometimes it's on the first, they wait a week, but this week it's today. And Carl will go through them as usual. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures unched, as they used to say, in the trading floor. NASDAQ futures up 24, Dow futures down 20, so very quiet. Obviously, not a whole lot of people around today. And we also have, but the jobs numbers are today, so we're going to get some kind of a move in when they come out. Question is which way, I guess. If it's good news, it's good news. Bad news is good news. Something we'll see. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 1 point. But still 40,912. Here's the headline: is Japan's Nikkei falters in a volatile session after crossing 41,000 mark to hit fresh all-time high. So it was over 41,000. Now it closed at 40,912. So it came down 100 points in there, but not a whole hell of a lot. Hang Seng, however, down 228. It's 1.3% back, way under 18,000, 17,999. And the Shanghai down 763, 29.49. So they're under 29.50. So whatever the Chinese government's doing over there trying to pump these markets up, they're not doing a very good job. I think they're putting money into the system, but whatever it is, it's not working. As a way of review, on Wednesday, the Dow was down 23. S&P was up 28, and NASDAQ up 159. Yet another big day for the NASDAQ, and the Tesla's the one that's been leading the charge here. Not sure exactly why, but it is. Today, we've got the DAX up 140.7%, FTSE up 1, call that flat, CAC around up 20.3%. We also have the huge election thing in Britain where Labour, I guess, won for the first time since 97. I'm going to have Mike comment on that. He probably knows more about it than I do, which is, throw it this way, a lot of people know a lot more about that than me. U.S. Treasuries unchanged, 4.34. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.57. Japan down 1 basis point, but still 107, over 1%. Oil down a penny, 83.87, still at the upper end of this range. Brent down 12 cents, 87.31. Maybe Greg will give us a comment on whether he thinks oil's about to break out here. Natural gas down 6 cents, 235. RBOB down a penny, 258. And I was talking to some people yesterday. I don't know how the hell gas can be under $3 a gallon in the South if the wholesale price is 260 almost. I mean, I can't believe there's only a 40 cent edge there, but evidently there is. Gold up 240, 23.71. Silver up 4 cents, 30.88. Which is significant because it had a huge up move on Wednesday, and so far it's not getting its ass kicked today like it has every other time it's had a move up. Copper up 1.15, 4.68. That's a huge move in copper. That's 3.5%. Greg will also comment on that. It's kind of the biggest move in copper I've seen in a long time. Bitcoin down 3,000. Wow, 55,365. That's got to be a low there for many, many months. And we have the U.S. dollar, which has been causing a lot of this. Actually, it's been getting clobbered here a little bit. The euro's back over 108, 108.17. The British pound, 127.8. So both of those are up. Dollar's down. Japanese yen is almost back down to 160. It was up to almost 162. Now it's 160.87. So for first time in a while, we got a lot of movement in the currency markets. A lot of stuff there, Greg. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, everyone. 6:38 here in Chicago. We've got 71 degrees right now. High of 81 today. Spots of thunder showers this afternoon. So take your umbrella. Phoenix, 92 right now. Record highs possible, up to 116. Sunny and hot pretty much everywhere with dangerous heat. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 8 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 21 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 13 minutes. And the Ryan from 95th is 12 minutes. Stevenson, 294 to the Ryan is 15 minutes. Light traffic everywhere. Diamondbacks beat the Dodgers, that was 9-3. Sox lost to the Guardians, that was 4-8. And the Cubs win. 10-2. Wow, 10-2 at home, Wrigley yesterday. UEFA Championship. We've got Spain, Germany at 11 a.m. and Portugal, France at 2 p.m. And Copa America is 8 p.m. with Venezuela and Canada. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
You guys, Mike and Kevin, we were going back and forth yesterday about our friend Dave going to Death Valley, right? As luck would have it, last night I'm watching Fox News and Fox Local News. They had a big special on the people going to Death Valley now because it's going to be 130 degrees there today or something. We're going to break through a record. I don't know if you guys have caught that. But
no,
Mike,
they're talking about it, but who knows?
Oh, no, Mike, the question from... They said you got to be careful because if you're there, they got all these blockades, but you can go through if you want. They said the helicopters can't fly in 130 degrees. I didn't know that. Is that true?
Well, they have a hard time. They might be able to fly, but they won't last long. So,
what do you mean by that? Just but they
it's a desert, so the it you know the well, I mean that's pretty self-explanatory, but the heat, you know, affects the engine, so it's difficult for them to cool down the way that they should.
Those things aren't water cooled, are they? They're air cooled.
I have no idea, Tom. You got me.
You don't know it yet, but you're going to give us what's going on politically in France and Britain, and can we trade any of this stuff, or is it just happening?
You know, England is kind of a contradiction because the liberals, so the Labour, is, you know, coming to the fore again, in contrast kind of to the rest of Europe. In France, it's, and this happens almost every election, Marine Le Pen, she is very powerful. Her father was, I believe, Maurice Le Pen, and they've always been a hard right party. Well, now they're coming to the fore. She has somebody that's very photogenic and, you know, very articulate running as her primary person. So they have a good chance of winning control of the French parliament. Macron, his policies are, they're moribund, or however you would phrase that. He's just having a hard time. He's still going to remain as president, but it's doubtful that he will control the parliament because both Le Pen's party and the second place party, yeah, they're not Macron's people. Macron's people came in third in the snap elections that he called.
Well, now, is this the final election, or is this there's one more to go? They have three elections, right? Or three stages?
Well, they do have three elections, but the first one was for the European Union, for the European Council. So
okay.
I think this is the final one, but don't quote me on that one.
What I was reading last night, it seemed to indicate that for this Le Pen person's party to win, they actually had to win 50%. Evidently, they didn't. And which means if Macron can somehow cut a deal with the other party, between the two of them, they have more than 50%, and sort of he can hang in there. Is that remotely
accurate?
That's
probably true. It's kind of the same as in Israel. A lot of European nations do that, you know, that they end up with very weak governing coalitions because the majority party doesn't, you know, they only win a plurality of votes rather than the majority.
Now, when you say right wing or liberal in Europe, is that synonymous with right wing or liberal here, or not really?
I think it kind of is, but in Europe it might be even more conservative. Like in Hungary, Orban is he's a very strong armed dictator. I mean, what do you call it? Trump's model, actually, I believe, is Orban, you know, because he's running Hungary with a very tight hand. Bolsonaro from Brazil was a Trump wannabe who just wasn't clever enough. So, you know, we'll see how it all works out.
I mean, the British group, and I'm not an expert, maybe Kevin is, but for them being supposedly so conservative, I never really, the way they've been governing, it doesn't sound all that conservative to me. It seemed kind of middle of the road, actually. What am I missing?
I was going to say, it varies from country to country, Tom. What you call conservative in one country, you might be calling moderate in another. So, that varies. But, you know, my read of Europe, as much as anything, is whoever is in power, their voters are saying, okay, I'm voting for not you guys.
Seems like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the case in France. You know, the French people are fed up. And the French want to, actually the French people, I believe, would want to go to a more socialist type government. That they want to work like 32 hours a week and maybe even less than that. But the French have an issue with immigrants also, the people coming from the French colonies in Africa. So France has a real, the banlieues, I'm not saying that right, but they're essentially little French countries within French cities. So,
well, how do you have how many million people living in all these, maybe a billion people living in all these places in the world they can't wait to get out of? How does anybody not have a migrant problem? I mean, it's hard not to, isn't it?
No, you're right about that.
What I was going to ask something real intelligent, and I just forgot what it was. Imagine that. But the
okay, go with the unintelligent.
I'll just go
for it.
I'm just kind of is there any major change in policy we can expect in Britain, or if Macron's out? I'm 32. I'd like to work 8 hours a week too, but I mean that's not happening. You know, I mean, is this stuff even real?
Well, Macron isn't going to be out. He still will be president of France. He's got the majority, but he's the president of France for at least two more years. There will be some major changes, I believe, in Britain because of the Labour government's taken over. We'll see how that works out too. But the Labour government is going to have a hard time because the Conservatives have governed for, as you said, roughly 14 years or something, and the people have just gotten sick of them, that's all.
Well, 97. That's what, 27 years?
Mm.
Was the last time they won. As I said this morning on radio, but who knows if they're right or not. But
well, Blair was, he's Labour, and he was in power when Bush was, so it's not 27 for sure.
Okay.
Because, in the 2000s, Blair was in government.
Well, now, France, and this is the tricky part. This is what I'm trying to get to. And Kevin, please pile in here. The monetary policy, which is what I'm looking at. I mean, for trading wise, because I mean we're supposed to be stocks and jacks. So sometimes you never know it. The trading policy. Whoever wins in France really doesn't, other than the pulpit, really doesn't affect the European Union monetary policy. Now that's made in Belgium, right, by the people who got elected 2 weeks ago. Now in Britain, do we think that the Labour Party is going to have a massive difference in monetary policy or stock policy? I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, the Labour Party could opt to try to go back into the EU. I kind of doubt that will happen. And the French have to me, the French and the Germans have an inordinate amount of power within the EU on monetary policy. I mean, the Germans have held hold the EU back for a long time with their tight controls of their currency. So,
well, I mean, if anybody's going to bail out Greece, for instance, it's going to be the Germans and French. Who else is going to be? Maybe the Swiss.
Well, the Swiss aren't in the EU.
Right.
They're neutral. But the French and the Germans objected to that. That's why Greece didn't get bailed out that last time.
Well, isn't Germany? They're essentially making sure those people are their customers, right? I mean, it's kind of an interesting spider web, that whole thing over the euro, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
but the euro has helped. You know, some of the other countries in Europe do a little bit better. And it's made travel much easier. I guess I'm biased in that respect.
Well, I mean, I remember we were over there. God, I went to a wedding, of all things, in January of 1988. And we drove from Amsterdam to Denmark. Why we did that, I have no idea. It was not my idea. We had four big guys in a Volkswagen Rabbit going like 90 miles an hour. The thing was like leaving the ground in the front. Guys, how come you're not going faster? Everybody else going faster. I go, if I go any faster, I won't be able to steer, you fatsoes in the back seat.
Tell me, did you have Bohemian Rhapsody playing on the radio?
Well, all I remember, to Mike's point, is every time we went by a border, we must have done a border thing. Well, we went into Germany, went out of Germany, and we went into somebody else in the middle. Every time, these poor students that were going back to school, all these guys made them empty their whole car out of all their crap they're going back to college with. Then the next, we'd see the same guy emptying his car out again. I'm thinking, this poor kid. But by the time he gets the, anyway, it was a pain in the ass, Mike, going from place to place, right?
Yes, it was. And if you needed whatever the local currency was, you stopped and got some.
So yeah. And
then you're driving around, or you end up back home with three or four different currencies. So.
But whoever wins this, is all the monetary policy made in Belgium? And then in France, it's kind of hard for me to believe. Like you say, they influence.
The EU has their own central bank, and so the monetary policy is made there. But the Germans still have, strong banks. So do the French. Some of the other nations do too. And that's really why the British didn't. Well, this is my bias. It's why the British didn't go into the EU, is because they would lose control of the pound. And there's a whole bunch of British people in finance markets in London that's where they make all their money. So,
well, so the British were never in. They were like half in.
They were half in, but their currency never went into the EU.
Now so Switzerland is not in at all, right?
That's correct.
So if you're going to Switzerland, you need a Swiss passport, or they don't have a Euro passport.
No, you just have to. Switzerland, you just can enter. There's really very little visa controls, unless you're probably from some wacko nation. Who knows? But the Swiss are pretty generous with their.
But if a Swiss guy wants to go somewhere, he's got to show his passport, a Swiss passport at every crossing. It's not a Euro passport.
Well, it's usually, they probably will let the Swiss get away with it, but they could check Swiss passports. That's correct.
Who else over there is not in there that we think is? Finland's not, or somebody's not, right? Is it Sweden? Somebody's not in there.
No, Sweden isn't. Finland is now, I think, as is Norway. They were holdouts, but the Russian incursion the Russian invasion into Ukraine has kind of scared some of those nations.
What's the status on that? Or am I missing any questions for Mike regarding Europe, Kevin? Sometimes I miss. You got anything that I don't have?
I think we do want to hit on Ukraine, and I think we're good. But that's going to fill us up the rest of the way. But I'd like to see what Mike's thinking about it, because it really has fallen out of the news for the most part.
My favorite actress, what's his name, Whiskey Foxtrot and whatever, same thing, isn't it? If it doesn't bleed on the front page.
What are you talking about, Jessica Chastain or what?
No, what's her name?
No, he's in love with Tina Fey.
Yeah, we can't hang out.
Oh, okay, all right.
Well, we're in order for
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Yeah, for every time she wanted to get on the first three pages, there'd be more and more people blown up.
Well, that's it. When I was in Grenada. Once things cooled down, then the reporters went out, and it goes from 5 minutes to 3 minutes to 1 minute, and then you're out. So.
Well, that's kind of what's happening seemingly in Ukraine. Unless one of my Ukrainian buddies stops by for a cocktail, I have no idea what's going on over there.
Well, it's at a stalemate, and the Russians are essentially, I think they're gaining a little bit of ground, although the Ukrainians are striking back. I think they struck five refineries the other day. They're hitting Russia where it hurts. So, but Russia has bombed every major city in Ukraine, and so no one in Ukraine is safe, essentially.
What
although
is this?
Life goes on.
What is this? They said some new bomb Russia was using the other day, and then I heard one report, and that was it. What are they talking about? Do you have any idea?
I don't know, Tom. That one.
Yeah, they said something about Russia was using some new, more powerful bomb, and then heard it on one.
If they're talking about the supersonic bomb, then that's very lethal.
What is it? What does that do?
It goes at hyperspeed. It's a hypersonic bomb, and the Chinese are developing it. We are developing it. The Russians are probably developing it in conjunction with the North Koreans. It's just a higher. Lou would be a better one to talk about this one, but it's just probably more potent and more lethal and goes faster.
So you can't shoot it down as easily, if at all.
That's correct.
But none of these bombs are we're not talking about a bomber going over and dropping them like watching 12 o'clock high. These are all launched from some other place, right, on some kind of a rocket.
That's
or something?
Correct. The hypersonic stuff could be launched from railroad tracks, could be launched. They're working on it from a naval vessel, but I don't think that there's no air-launched hypersonic missile that I am aware of.
Like, nobody actually has dropped a bomb in a long time, pretty much.
What do you mean?
Like out of a B-52 or B-17?
Well, but they're dropping plenty of dumb bombs or even smart bombs. I think that's what the Russians are doing, I believe, although they can bomb from Russian territory into the most of the major cities in Ukraine too.
But so. I mean, there's no plane that flies over and drops them like you see on TV.
I don't think so. No.
I mean, is this thing just going to go on forever or what?
Hey, Mike.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh well, Mike. What's your assessment of how the current U.S. political situation is affecting what the Russians and Ukrainians are doing? Are they just kind of in wait and see mode to see about the outcome of the election, or is that going to make somebody accelerate what they're trying to accomplish in anticipation of a change? What do you think's going on there?
I think that we will have an acceleration by the Russians, Kevin, and it's essentially our political situation has paralyzed the Ukrainians. But with Biden saying that you can bomb inside Russian territory, that did open the door a little bit for them so they can, try to do a little bit more against the Russians. But the Russians will continue to make those little inroads into, you know, the Russian-speaking publics of, or the Russian-speaking areas of Ukraine. And I believe the Russians want to get to the Dnieper River, and then that essentially gives them control of, a great deal of influence on the Ukrainian agricultural industry, and it gives them a lot of what used to be the former Soviet Union's tank sites and APC sites. The Ukrainians are very good on vehicles, and they used to perform that part of the Russian.
Mike, do you think someday that's going to be the settlement, that the Russian speaking people go with Russia? And someday,
Tom. But that could be if Trump comes into power. He keeps talking about he's going to strike a deal, but the Ukrainians are very proud people, as are the Russians, but that's those Russian-speaking republics or areas in Ukraine, that was Ukraine. So, and Ukraine is a sovereign nation.
I agree. Real quick, I mean, we can roll over a minute or two because I think Carl's on anyway. I heard last night, and many guys have seen this, had to do with what if Biden bails out, and this is not any kind of political statement. It has to do with the procedure. That if he says right now I'm not running, that evidently the delegates will be given to Harris, but they're not held. They don't have to vote for her even in the first round.
I don't think that's true, Tom. I think those delegates are up for grabs from that point on.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They in name, because she was on the ballot, they go to her, but they're not required to vote her the first round. So whatever that means. Last night they had three scenarios, and I kind of caught it. That's why I'm asking you guys. If he resigns the presidency right now and she becomes the president, then that's another whole pack of worms. Or if they just there was a third scenario that I don't even remember, but it's not all that clear what happens here if the guy's out.
Well, they could always, they're gonna try to invoke the 25th Amendment, which means that he's incompetent. And so that's another scenario. And, you know, and the plan was, I always thought the plan was for him to transition to Harris, but that didn't happen. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting that if he flat out resigns, then those delegates, I was surprised that they go to Herbert, they're not held. According to this thing last night, that's what I'm asking if that's even. But they had three scenarios. I can only remember two of them. Kevin, can you help me here? We can barely hear you, Kevin. You must have gone. We can't hear you at all. You're not coming in. I don't know why we can't hear Kevin, but we can't.
Somebody, I think he was in transit, Tom. But
all right, okay. But yeah, I'm not sure how this plays out, depending on which. But there's a big difference between him resigning before the. I'm not saying he's going to resign at all, but if he resigns before the convention versus after versus something else, that was the third scenario. If he's nominated and then resigns, then that's another whole. There's like three different possible ways to go with this thing. It's not all that clear, is it, Mike?
No, it's not, Tom. And you know, it'll be curious as to how it all works out. But I firmly believe that Biden is too proud and he will run. Let's see what happens this morning with George Stephanopoulos. He's going to throw Biden some softball questions, and then Biden will come out looking like a champ. But
well, if
you're seeing all kinds of negative reporting now from both the Washington Post and the New York Times, and that is not a good indicator for Biden.
Well, I'm going to say one of the strongest representatives here in Illinois. When I say strongest, he clearly, a guy named Mike Quigley, he's actually my guy. He has made some very serious inroads in Washington. He's a pretty smart guy, and he's on all the Mike. You know these committees. He's on like the double secret military stuff in the House. So he's impressed a lot of people.
Right.
You know him at all? Do you meet him in your travels?
No, I've never met him.
But he's on what are the House committees, and what the ones that were like clandestine warfare and all the other stuff.
That's the HPSI. That's the House for intelligence, security, and intelligence.
I think he might be on that committee.
That's the acronym is HPSI, and then in the Senate, it's the CISI.
So the guys that are on that are usually the people they think are the best, right? Or
they're up and comers, that's for sure. Just like Mike Gallagher had the China committee, but then he resigned. So
he came out and said that he should just get out.
Right. Well, he was sick of. His father talked to us at the Notre Dame reunion, actually. He was sick of raising money every 2 years. He just got fed up.
Oh, yeah, it's a tough deal. Mike, hey, thank you very much. Good stuff. I don't know nothing about soccer, so thank God you come out and say this. My guys are going to be all over. How's my German buddies going to go watch the game and allegedly go to dinner later? They're all going to be trashed.
Well, you never know. Who knows? He might be very happy if they win, and he'll be extremely upset if they lose. And as I said, I'm taking Spain. So.
Well, the thought was we might go to a German bar tonight for dinner. I think we probably shouldn't do that, eh?
Well, just, you know, before you leave work, you know, the game will be over, so you'll be able to judge.
Do you think the drunks will be gone? I'm thinking no.
Probably, particularly if they lose.
That's true.
If they win, they'll be still drinking. So
well,
it could be fun.
The Boston bar that I hang out in, and we're going to dash for Carhartt in a second, those guys are, I won't say anything bad, I'll say they're the most unique fandom. If they lose, there's blue smoke coming out of people's asses out the front door. I've never seen a group. I mean, it's unreal. The place clears out. they're unusual. S&P Futures down one. As if you're something. Mike, thank you again. Have a nice weekend, buddy. We'll be right back. All right. It's Carl Denninger.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, Wolfpack Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Greg Pappas on the boards, playing a little I Can't Get No Satisfaction. What can't you get, Greg? You had a nice fourth, and you got a nice weekend coming up. What satisfaction are you out of?
All of it.
All of
fed
it?
Fed up, want to go home.
What, fed up, want to go home? Well, you got to trade today. Make some scratch-o first.
Nah. rather be drinking again.
Oh, God. We have Mr. Carl?
You do.
You were listening in, I know. God, we touched on enough topics. What the hell, Carl? I mean, is this going to make a change in Britain, monetary policy, stock policy? I didn't even know those other guys were conservative. They didn't act like it, in my mind. And in France, since the euro makes their money supply decisions, I don't think that makes any difference to us, does it? I mean, does any of this stuff make any difference? Can I trade on it and make some dough?
Well, I think it does make a difference. And actually, but for those of us over here in the United States, I think it makes less of a difference than it does within the European sphere, because you have an out of phase shift. That's the best way to put it. Okay, the British results are clearly hard left. Okay, from the standpoint of where they.
But now, I was asking those guys now. When we British hard left is not the same as hard left here, because they're still Brits.
Well, it is and it isn't. All right, I mean the American lens on left versus right is very different than the British or the European one.
That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, but to some extent, I think that sort of categorization is essentially an attempt to slur the other guy, right? I mean, it's the old smear the queer game from when we were, you know, in school. And we play it too, okay, in that, you know, we look at the Democrats as being leftists and the Republicans being rightists, and to some extent it's an attempt to smear the other guy as opposed to talking about policies and how you bucket those into those, you know, into that kind of category is a fascinating thing when you think about it, but that's that's humanity. We always try to find simple answers to complex problems, and the problem with doing that, of course, is that you're almost always wrong when you do that. At least to some extent, you may not be completely wrong, but you're almost always wrong.
Well, I know I've been a Democrat my entire life up until the last 10 or 15 years. I don't recognize this party. And a lot of my Republican friends don't recognize their party either.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, is that we have... It's. I think a lot of it, from an economic point of view, and from a market's point of view, goes back to the basic premise that many people have observed over the millennia, that all societies rot from the bottom. People think they rot from the top. okay? But they don't. They rot from the bottom. And that a representative republic, or you know what people call democracy, which really isn't, right? I mean, democracy is 50.1% of the people deciding to eat the rest of the country.
Yeah, well, huh?
and you know, I mean, if you believe in democracy, then
what
if,
I say, four wolves and a chicken voting to see what's for dinner.
Yeah, what you're going to have for dinner, yeah. Exactly, and. You know, I mean, if you believe in democracy, then when you're on the wrong side of that, well, that's just too bad, right? All your stuff gets confiscated, including quite probably your life. You know, a republic is exactly the opposite. A republic is the definition of certain things that the state and the rest of the population does not have a right to interfere with. And that's the end of the conversation. Okay, that's it. I don't care how many votes you have. It doesn't make any difference. You can't do that. And we always, societies always try to claim that we have this high-minded thing, and then we try to find ways to whittle it away and make it disappear because it gets in the way of something we want to do, all right? But when you get into the monetary policy and the you know, the common thing, you have so many people. For how long has the Ron Paul wing run around and said, go back to the gold standard, everything will be fine? Okay, in the time of Hammurabi, was everything fine? They were on a gold standard.
Well, I think everything
wasn't fine. The bankers handed out chits for more than the gold they had on deposit. Okay, and what happened? The system blew up. Just like what we're having happen today.
Well, with those guys, sorry to interrupt, but there's a little, I know some, you know, some of this history, as do you, but For some stupid reason, Carl, I used to read all this stuff. People would always leave the gold standard whenever they needed it. If there was a war or they had some kind of recession, they would.
Of course.
But I think what
Rand, because the alternative, Chief, is you have to suck it up and deal with it.
Well, but I mean, what Rand Paul is, I think the guy is actually very bright. I'd love to have him on the show. I mean, I think he's really bright, but his way to articulate stuff, and maybe it's just the way the press picks shit up. I don't know, but. I mean, I don't want us to go back on, quote, the gold standard, but I also want some semblance of discipline in how much money people can print in office. I mean, the gold standard essentially gives that. Okay, if you say that, okay, it's $100 to the ounce. Well, if you have X number of ounces, you can have that many bucks. That's the discipline of the gold standard. Or, like what De Gaulle used to do, he'd show up with all the dollar bills from France, and he'd say, "I want the gold."
Right,
and that's, quote, the discipline. But now, I don't think that's the solution. Yet, the other end of it seems like we either have this draconian gold standard or no discipline whatsoever. And there has to be a middle ground here somewhere.
Right. The problem is that you know, this fantasy land game where, you know, where the guy shows up and says, "All right, fork up the gold," right?
That wasn't fantasy. He used to do that.
Oh no, they did.
Yeah.
But the problem is that there's this fantasy land game that when that happens, the answer is going to be, "Oh, here's your gold." No, it's not.
If everybody is doing this properly, but I'm saying we could turn around and send a ship over there and say we got all these French francs. It's before the euro. By the way, you give us the gold. Yeah, I mean,
right.
I mean, that was the whole idea.
And I understand the concept behind it. I'm simply saying that in the real world,
well,
the
Kyle, concept it was so long ago, though, a lot of listeners probably don't, so us going through it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I'm just saying, yeah. The concept is great. The problem is it never ends up that way, right? Historically speaking, it never has. And so, you know, I mean, okay, I think it's great that, you know, I should be able to smoke crack every day and not have it destroy my health and ultimately kill me.
Okay, but careful there. It hasn't happened essentially in our lifetime. But it has before. The discipline actually did work. I mean, and I'm not. I read this. Neither one of us.
To a degree, yes.
Well, I
yes.
mean, after the Civil War, the U.S. was a, you know, a young nation, right? Even though we just had this massive war, and during the war, I'll lob this one out there. The Confederates, you know, other than having more people shot and less industry and so forth, one of the main reasons I'd say they lost was they couldn't maintain control on their currency, where the North did.
To a huge extent.
They didn't, the money supply went up 10-11% a year. We went up 40 during COVID.
I understand that. I'm just saying that, you know, but Lincoln did ignore the gold standard and printed greenbacks.
Correct, but I'm saying, but after the war.
But after the war,
by the way, how did they, I should know this, but I don't. But the true story is the federal government essentially drained the greenbacks out of the system, okay, and went back to the gold standard because as a young nation, they didn't want to go forward not being on the gold standard because everybody else was, right. Or supposedly was. So we wanted to regain our status with the rest of the world, correct? Was it?
Well, yes. Yeah, essentially what it was, well, that was a wartime intervention. We needed to do it because, you know, we needed to do it, right? And but the war is over.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, this is, and the other aspect of it, though, is that what, you know, historically speaking, when you look at nations, you start with these things, and then somebody somewhere along the line figures out that you can shave, you know, you can shave the coins, so to speak, right?
Like the Romans did. This is not new.
This is the history of nations. This is not U.S. specific by any stretch of the imagination, and it goes back to antiquity. And you learn that you can shave the coins. And at some to some degree, you get away with it, all right, for some period of time. And it seems to work out okay for some period of time. And then not so much all of a sudden. And, you know, the Roman Empire collapsed as a result of this sort of stuff. We actually, when America was formed, we had a law that got passed, the original Coinage Act, that if you did that, you got hanged. It was a literal death penalty offense.
Maybe we should bring that one back.
Well, you know, it's wouldn't that result in, I mean, could we build a gallows with enough compartments and ropes hanging off the top of the National Mall for all the people that would have to, you know, get it under that punishment? I'm not so sure. But well, it's...
Well, I'm a, you know, as you know, I'm still a pretty serious apostle of Milton Friedman. And I know my nephew told me one Sunday, everything the guy has said has been debunked. And I go, wait a minute.
No, not everything.
Not everything. I mean, some of his predictions of stuff going forward, some of his ideas that if you have economic freedom and you're going to get political freedom, a lot of that stuff, I mean, I listened to the guy talk. I mean, a lot of that stuff didn't come true. But right. his research on monetary policy that nobody else has ever done, that's not debunked. It's history, for God's sake. But the thing that I remember the most is, imagine that, Carl, me remembering the contrary stuff. Both the U.S. after the Civil War, and he named, like, there's four other countries that I've read his papers. They're not in books, they're in papers he wrote. They have to do with, I mean, right now, one of the reasons why I'm essentially so pissed off at the government, they're throwing money into the system, and we're not really growing very much. But they're telling us we are, because nominally we are. Okay,
Chief. It again, I post this graph all the time. It's one of the first charts in the book that I managed to get Wiley to publish after the crash. By the way, I would thank Jan Tavakoli for making the introduction, which is the only reason that got picked up, is that's how they found it. One of the smartest women I've ever met and I've ever known. She still lives in Chicago, which
really?
Is awesome. Yeah, so sometimes, you know, there's a little bit of crazy there. I can't imagine why anybody would put up with that. Well, you know, I mean, it's like anything else. There's good and bad everywhere, right?
Yep.
But yeah, and one of the first points I make is that when you start doing this stuff, it looks good. Okay? And if you want to go back to root causes of why people do this repeatedly and why America did this, it's that we do not insist as part of our educational system. I don't care if you're taught in a public school or in a private school. We do not insist that in order to get out of middle school, when you're supposed to be able to do basic arithmetic, that you understand how exponential functions work. We just don't.
Well, and we don't have people who can do multiplication and division.
Well, but in and well, then you shouldn't be able to claim to have a high school diploma. And we used to have flashcards.
I understand that,
but if you want to dig ditches, that's fine. But you know what? But if you want to claim to be educated, certainly if you want to go to college, you ought to understand inherently before you get there how two exponential functions will always lead to the same result.
How are you going to stay
on that road?
My niece-in-law says if you take the eighth graders that she's trying to catch up with on math, if you brought the flashcards that we used to do in third grade in front of there, you would not have a winner.
That's absolutely
how the hell are you going to do exponential stuff if you can't do 9 times 6?
I'm not telling you I understand how we solve some of these problems. Okay, please don't get me wrong on that.
Well, but I guess we're going to make sure we zero in the job report here pretty quick. But I guess the point I'm trying to make, Carl, and of course I never make a decent point these days, but is there the story that you're supposed to be believing here is because we pump money into the place and everything is nominally higher because cars are 50% higher, 40% higher, that somehow or another GM sales are terrific, even though the numbers are probably down. That's the crap they're trying to force up your behind. But there actually have been times in history in the U.S. after the Civil War, and Milton Friedman, I can't remember, was it Pakistan or a bunch of other places, actually had tremendous advancements in the economy while the prices were going down and money was being drained out. And nominally, it looked like you were in trouble, but you weren't. I mean, the 10 years after the Civil War probably showed nominally no growth whatsoever. Yet
you
it was
guys
one
saying we should have a major war?
No, what I'm saying is...
What?
What I'm saying by draining... Just now, if you put money into the system and everybody, it looks like things are going great because everything is inflated up, I'm saying you can actually drain money out. And if you have innovation and you have productivity going on, you're still going to have this growth, even though it's not going to show nominally.
Yeah, and the thing, you know, you have to be very careful with the stuff about post-war periods, okay, as being representative of much of anything. You blow up the other guy's stuff, you end up with a tremendous advantage when you win.
Civil War, not so much, because we blew up our own stuff.
Well, everybody blew up everybody's stuff, right? I mean, but in the post-Civil War time frame, all right, and, you know, I mean, because that's, you know, the conflict since then, we have enjoyed... what Warren Buffett loves to call an impenetrable moat, right? In that, there was a war. It was over there, all right? We did not have really any sort of, I mean, other than the outlying islands, you know, we had islands in the Pacific that were allegedly ours that got blown up.
Well, a lot of our best and brightest got blown up.
Well, we had a lot of people got blown up, but we didn't have all of GM's factories get blown up. Okay. We didn't have, you know, I mean, you take a look at what happened over in parts of Europe. Everything got blown up.
Well, we're on a couple different levels of the chessboard here. What I'm saying is, if you listen to everybody, including the government right now, you put 40% more money into the system, and their story is if we drain 10% of that out, we're going to cause this massive recession. No, you're not, because the 40% in hasn't really even created a huge growth. It just looks like it is.
Right.
That's my point. Is that we could drain some of this out, and it really, other than maybe the stock market dropping 10% when it's up 20%, the amount, the damage to, quote, those people will be real, I guess.
Right.
But to anybody else, it might not make any difference at all. It might be positive.
Yeah, I guess the biggest challenge I have with all this, all this nonsense that's going on, is that we've gone so far down this road, and you have such a group of people, such a large group of people within the country. I mean, you know, we're a divided nation politically. It's okay. What else is new? We always have been to some extent. But try to get into people's heads. That just the simple stuff. Right? I mean, we have. You look at what's happened with Just take car insurance, for example.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right? It's done a moonshot in terms of cost, right? Well, one of the reasons it did a moonshot was completely out of your personal control, but it was entirely out of collective control. You know, all right, so, you know, car insurance, like anything else, when it comes to a collective policy, which, you know, insurance is, I mean, that's the whole point, right, is you pool risks together and you divide by the number of people who have it. The problem is that it, from an insurance company's perspective, because they are limited on profit percentage, being more efficient does not do anything for them, because the rate regulators will not let them keep the money. They don't get to do that. So the only way for them to grow...
Harold, is that true for... I think that's true for, like, life insurance, because you actually... But is that true for car insurance or homeowners?
Oh, absolutely. All insurance markets are state-regulated. It's why they're exempt under McCarran-Ferguson from antitrust. It's why they can share claim information among them without ending up in trouble under 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1. But the state regulators all slam on them with and essentially, it ends up in the same place, 10%.
Well, okay? but when you... when we don't want to go down this rat hole before the labor numbers, but in my previous life, Carl, you could tell me to limit your profit to 10%. You and I just earned a yacht. We earned a bonus. I could get you. I could keep us at 10%.
Oh, there's 100 ways to game it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it doesn't get gamed. I'm saying that this is the formal environment that exists. Okay. So if you want to know why the Institute for Highway Safety, right, Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, guess who pays for it? The insurance companies, right? It supposedly operates in the public interest. Well, the facts are that, you know, you have a mandate today to have airbags in every car, right? It's a government mandate. Must. All right. The data is that this has not done all that much in terms of them actually preventing you from getting injured or killed. Why? Because the only time they really come into play in terms of being a primary difference in outcomes is if you don't have your seatbelt on. If you do have your seatbelt on, the seatbelt is the reason you're not dead, not the airbag. Okay? Now, if you don't have it on, well, yeah, maybe it makes a difference. But maybe it doesn't, too, because you might...
I just saw a car today with about six of them deployed. I don't think the guy made it, though.
Well, the thing is that, well, yeah, well, I mean, if you're dead anyway, it doesn't matter, right? So the thing is that, but what it has done is that from essentially the point that they were introduced, if you have a collision and the airbags go off, the car's a total. All right.
Well, is that true? If all the side ones go off, it's messed? You can't put all those back together?
You can put it... The reason it's a total is that the cost of replacing them, plus the electronics that are, in many cases, one-time use, that cannot be reset. Okay? And part of that is because people want the data. So the way they're designed is that they indelibly burn the information at the time of the crash into them. All right. And on top of that, you have single-use sensors that, you know, when they trigger, well, you know, they're triggered, all right? They have to be changed. And on top of that, just to make it even more interesting, the way that they come out, they destroy all the trim panels in question. So, you know, your steering wheel...
Yeah, this car I saw this morning, and I think the guy was destroyed too, but... Well, we got a dash here to break, but I'm gonna lob something really, really, really sophomoric at you. I'm going to say the problem is, did you ever drive a 1950s car?
Oh, yeah, it was all metal.
Yeah, but I'm saying those cars without the seat belts and stuff, you were probably good to 30 miles an hour in a crash. You would hit the dashboard and any padding or whatever, but I'm going to say that everybody drove 60.
Right.
So then when you put the seat belts in and you were probably good to 40 miles an hour, everybody drives 70. And now that you've got the airbags, everybody drives 90. So, I mean,
there's 90, right.
Everybody's going to go 30 miles an hour beyond whatever safety you put in the thing.
Oh, but the thing is despite all these nannies and these things that have been mandated, you would think, if they actually worked, that, you know, the cost of insurance would go through the floor because, you know, the injuries are less and you know, the collisions are less frequent. Well, that's not what's happened. So whether that's
no, you guys don't realize that the price of the cars are actually going down because they're going faster.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so, you know, let's
go to break early here so we have these numbers when we come back, Carl. SP Futures up 1, NASDAQ is up 30. We'll come back with the numbers, the big numbers.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom, Greg Pappas on the board. We're just going to have a very abbreviated. I've got the S&P futures all over the place, but they're now settling it up 60. I've got the number; these numbers out. They don't have them out on TV yet. So why don't we just go to Carl. Carl, do you have them? I've got the household number. They're up a little bit on the employment. We're also up to 4.1 on the unemployment.
You know, can I ask a
ask a question? Sure.
Why is it that for the last several reports, and I'd have to actually go back into my archives and grab the PDFs and see if they using, they say little changed for the unemployment rate. Have you noticed that? Do you know how little changed? What is the definition of little changed?
Well, we're up from 3.7 to 4.1 in 5 months, so that's not little changed.
Well, I was going to say, that's why I was going to point this out, is that in January it's at 3.7, and it's little changed all the way up to 4.1.
I don't know if I can answer that question, but you can. Maybe you can answer this one. My first economics class ever at the University of Notre Dame, I walked in, and the first class, day one, the professor said, most useless number there is the unemployment number. And, here I am, how many years later, and we're still talking about this stupid number. When I say that, the numbers are, well, this is the household survey. Carl's going to go into this more and more. Anyway, we're 208 versus 200, right? Isn't that the deal? So the numbers are, there's 161 million people, 199 working, okay? There's 172 that aren't working. Out of that 172, 6.8 are actively looking for a job, and how you figure that out, God only knows. I mean, a lot of them are on unemployment rolls, but so out of the 107, we're saying 6.8 are looking for a job, not 6.7 or 6.9, and that's how you determine this 4.1%, which is insanity out of a number that big, right? What's the rounding error, for God's sake?
Well, by the way, on the unadjusted, the non-seasonally adjusted, we went from 3.7 unemployment in May to 4.3. That's okay. Not a small change.
No.
All right. And
so now this one is the adjusted is 4 to 4.1.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, the change in the couch surfing figure for the last month is pretty substantial too.
They've got it down. This has it down 80,000.
Now, well, the unadjusted number is down 1.2 million.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And
I mean, it's down or up?
Down from 106.72 to 99.431.
Well, so where did all those people go?
That's a good question, isn't it? That's the not in labor force number. And the unadjusted number, people who currently want a job, okay, so that's the people who are supposedly looking, is massively down as well, from 6.259 million to 5.655. So we had a dichotomy that doesn't make any sense, right? In that people got off the couch, but they aren't looking for work, and the unadjusted change in actual employed was plus 433, which is nowhere near large enough to absorb that. Okay, I mean, it's, you know, a third of it.
What do you got in population? Did they mess with the population number?
No. The population number is about where, I mean, that's, there was a plus a couple hundred, well, 190, which is, I mean, that's about
that's,
right.
That's what this is, 268, 248 to 268, 438. So it's 190.
Yeah, that's about right.
Then they've got people.
Because, okay, and by the way, on the non-seasonally adjusted, seasonally adjusted, those are the same. And the reason is that that adjustment happens once a year in January. Remember, I always talk about that in January. I'm like, you have to be careful with these numbers because they make a retrospective change to the non-institutional population.
All right, let me give a definition out here because we're, as usual, we're talking like, you're talking like you know what you're talking about because you do. And I'm trying to keep up, but there's the population number, okay, 268. These people, these are over 16 years old, available for work. It actually used to be 14. Good.
It's 16 or older, and yes, and
non-institutional. Means you're not in jail.
Basically means you're not in a jail or a nursing home.
Right. So, well, nursing home, really?
Yes, if you're in a nursing home, it doesn't count.
Well, so which leaves you with two numbers. There's 168 million that are working, and there's 107.2 million that aren't. Out of the 107.2, 6.8 are actively looking for work, right? So you have, so you're in the labor force out of the 161 that are working, plus the 6.8 that aren't. The other people are out of the labor force, either retired in school or God knows what, right? That's how simple the simple the calculation is. Not, it's not simple how you get there, right?
Right, right. Well, this is so, and then June's an interesting month every year in the, you know, I talk a lot about the educational split, right, of who's working, who's not working. And there's a couple of things that are rather interesting in that, you know, in that table too, in that as you grow, as you get older, you can attain more education, but you can never lose it. The only way you can come off the top bucket, the bachelor's degree, is to die. All right. Or go into nursing home or jail.
Yeah, you go to jail. Which a lot of people.
You go to jail, then you come out of the number.
It's hard to do that in Cook County, no matter what you do.
Well, I'm just saying, the only way you can come out of the, you know, out of that top bucket is to either croak or to go to jail. As every June, we see a migration because those people who are not yet in high school, you know, not out of high school, they get out of high school. So less than a high school diploma rolls into the high school graduate, no college. And those people who had no college, some of them now do have college, okay? So there's a roll down into the bachelor's degree and higher that is a, you know, progressive bucketing that goes on. And June is, of course, the month when most of that happens. Not all, you know, it happens in other parts of the year too. But the majority, there's an outsized thing. It's kind of like looking at the budget deficit numbers in April, right? You're kind of stupid to do that because that's when they get all the tax receipts from individual income tax.
January, where people got to send in their estimated.
Well, the 1120s,
yeah.
Okay, going in January, too. For corporations. So anyway, the expected drop in the civilian labor force that you would think, with less than a high school diploma, you would think that this would happen in that bucket in the month of June. Well, it actually went up this month, which is kind of odd, okay?
Well, Carl, are we showing our age here a little bit? When I was in college, virtually everybody had a summer job. I understand that,
but the thing is that we're talking about the labor force. We're not talking about the number of summer jobs.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm saying the civilian labor force number went up, in the less than high school diploma bucket, and you would expect that it would drop. Now, interestingly enough, it did drop last month. So, you know, maybe this is a calendar thing when the schools get out and how it overlaps with the sample week, right? I mean, there may be some calendar and things going on here. But as I have pointed out, one of the more troubling things that's been in this data for a while, and it's here again this month, is that the bachelor's degree and higher civilian labor force number is down.
Yeah, I don't see how that can be. I mean, it was.
Well, you can see how it can be. The problem is if we're not producing people who are educated and able to actually do the important things that keep society running, we've got problems. They may not happen instantaneously, but we've got problems.
Kevin wants to know, is the military... military is not part of the non-institutional population, is it? Where is military?
Oh, yeah, no, it counts. No, civilian non-institutional population is exactly what it sounds like.
Okay, so if you got a job in the military, you're working.
But yeah, you're...
Okay.
The only way you don't count is if you're in jail or institutionalized because you're permanently disabled, which, you know, for the most part, that's old people, right? I mean, you know, if you're in a nursing home.
I was going to ask you something very... Keep going. I'll think of it, what I was just going to say, because Kevin...
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the other internals, because...
Oh, I know what I want to ask you. Kevin sent around that thing this morning regarding the manufacturing survey numbers, the ISM, which I'm going to say I always look at, Carl, but I've never found it tradable. Because, you know, it comes out all the time. Plus, you've got the what's the one out in the Northeast? The something something. There's the Philly Fed, then there's the New York.
There's New York Fed, there's Philly Fed. There's regional indices. Yeah,
but the service one has been holding up. And Kevin sent a thing around this morning saying that for the first time, the service sector there has dipped in the last month.
Under 50, which is recession.
Yeah, and he wanted you to comment on that, or we all always want you.
Yeah,
to comment.
Well, the ISM is very rarely a tradable figure.
Now, who does that?
Institute for Supply Management.
But who are they?
It's a survey group, basically.
Are they
it's,
somebody we trust or not?
It's a survey. Okay. Is it meaningfully accurate? Yeah, I think it probably is. All right. I mean, I look more towards the prices paid and prices received areas within that report than anything else in terms of for signals, but. But does it is it fairly broad based and therefore, you know, something to pay attention to? Yeah, I think it is. And that we're seeing the services side go into contraction territory is important. We've also seen in the regional Philly, you know, the various Fed indexes, Philly, New York, in those indices we've seen quite a bit of deterioration too. And those bounce around a lot, so you have to they're real noisy.
I just asked you a question. This is there's no business on the air, but I'm going to say it anyway. Before Audrey, I had a lady friend, and if we were going to go to dinner and meet like somebody new, she would ask me, now, do we like these people, or are these we have to put up with because of business? she was at least smart enough to ask the question, are these people we like?
By the way, one of the tables that is in here, you know, we've talked about this split between the establishment and the household survey and, you know, the multiple job holder thing, right? According to the Bureau of Lies and Scams, there has been an uptick over the last 12 months in this. They don't give it to you on a month-by-month basis, but they do on an annualized, June versus June. And the same thing with not in labor force. They claim that's up a little bit, but the multiple job holders, they claim it went from 7.88 million to 8.194, 4.9% to 5.1. Now, if you believe that only 5%...
I'm going to take the over on that.
I was going to say, if you believe that only 5% of the people in this country have more than one job, I'd like to know what you're smoking.
Well, what I mean, just simple stuff. If you know of somebody who's in an accountant, I mean, I don't think he gets paid for it. My brother, since he's the nicest man on earth, still does taxes for half of his in-laws.
Right.
You know, I mean, I doubt if he ever gets a dime, but what if he did get paid? I mean, he's not going to count that as a job, but I don't think he gets paid for it. But where, I guess my question, I don't know if you, on, he's on, he's here usually on Tuesday and Friday. Was he, you know Ricardo, Greg's covering for him today.
Yeah.
Ricardo's a great kid, and he, I mean, I haven't known him that long, but he's one of the kids salt of the earth. Now, he's going to junior college, and now he's all happy because they're, evidently DePaul and somebody else is going to bring other professors in there where he's going to be able to go at least a year of his next two at the same place he's going for the same price. And maybe even both of them and get his bachelor's degree from what used to be a two-year institute. Anyway, he works here. He works for another radio station where he's a board op during the day, and he also works something else at night. So the guy's got three jobs, and he's going, where exactly does the Bureau of Labor Statistics put this guy, or is he's nowhere, he's just got one job? I mean,
that's a good question. You know, there is another interesting piece of data in here. The wage growth is basically going to zero, as has the weekly check.
That's not what the administration is telling you.
Well, they're lying according to their own people, because it was 2.5 tenths of a percent in weekly checks, total private, in the last month. So let's see, if we annualize that.
If you look at the weekly checks, you've been talking the last 3 months, how there's a split between hourly earnings and weekly checks. Is that still going?
Correct. Yeah, the wage growth annualized from the last month is almost exactly 3%.
A yearly,
correct.
That's
the exponential annual.
Right. So if you were to go back to February, well, I'm only asking this because you probably know. If you went back to February 2020 or March when all this crap started with the COVID and everything, what would you say the hourly earnings are up according to these guys? I'm going to say inflation is 40%, but if we wanted to have real numbers,
nowhere close to that.
Is it half of that or not even half?
Yeah, probably about half. I'd have to go back into the data tables from the BLS because I don't track that one, you know, personally, so I can't like give it to you off the top of my head because I don't have it staring at me in an Excel screen.
My gut is half.
I think it's about half. Yeah, but now this is the interesting thing: the hourly. Now this is total private, so this is, you know, goods, services. I'm not breaking anything down here. The delta in hourly earnings annualized on a 12 month basis, so you know, to the monthly to the 12th power, right? That's 3.49%, but the average check is 3.0 flat. So this again continues the trend that we've been seeing, which is that I don't care what they try to tell you, hours are getting cut because the per hour compensation is rising faster than the check is. Now that is a negative signal. There is no other way to read that, right? If you know, because the thing is this, I mean, you know, I can tell you as a former employer, if I can add hours to people's time, especially if they're not working 40 and I don't got to pay time and a half, I'm going to do that before I bring on more people.
Yeah, but isn't there a, again, I should know this, isn't there a number where you got to start pumping out benefits?
Well, that's one of the distortions that happened. Yes, that the formal thing for the Obamacare thing is 32 hours. Okay, what ended up happening when they did this, and my daughter ran into this because she was, you know, she was starting out with, you know, getting your first jobs as a, you know, as a teenager, blah 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 blah. When this whole thing came about, and you used to pretty reliably be able to get into the service industries and, you know, do 32 or 35 hours, right? You weren't full-time, but you could do that, all right? Well, as soon as those mandates came out, every single employer went to 28. And they capped you out at 28, and they meant it. And the reason was that if you had somebody that called in, you had to be able to call one of those people and have them show up and, you know, work half a shift or whatever, right? But you couldn't go over 32, or you would have to give them the.
So 30, is this tennis or baseball? Is 32 exactly in or you out?
It's 32 is the is the limit above which you must offer health insurance or you get fined.
When I say tennis or baseball, baseball the foul line's in, tennis is the line out, or is it in?
I think it's 32.0, you're in.
Okay, you're in. All
right. Right. So basically,
so you need to be 31.999 somehow.
Correct. You have to be under 32. And so what all the employers did, and I saw it happen in real time, and what it did to young people who were just trying to, you know, have a job to be able to, you know, pay for their gas and insurance and, you know, their fun and things like this when they were in school. It was ridiculous because we lived in a place where the majority of the summer jobs were across the bridge and the toll got jacked 4 or 5 times. So it was the point.
Sounds like the Chicago Skyway.
Oh, it was the same sort of thing. It was bad enough that literally 45 minutes, close to an hour of your wage, you know, wages for a day, were taken up in tolls to get to and from work.
See, Kyle, you're never supposed to do that because I do that and all it does is drive you nuts. If you ever if you look at the numbers like we're looking at, and you say, okay, they say this.
Oh, by the way,
they
Chief, you know it's worse than that because that's pre-tax.
Yeah, we say this, and this. Then all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, let's go back 10 years. And this is what people made, and this is what stuff costs. Then you look at it and you go, those numbers don't match. Right?
Yeah.
Well, actually, we haven't mentioned this in a while. We used to, and I say we, the U.S. of A., nation's birthday was yesterday. Happy birthday. There was a time, this is going to really floor you. I used to help people with taxes. Can you imagine that? Can't even be helping
you. Go figure. I helped some friends because, there's, primarily because I always buy the TurboTax version and you can do 5 federal returns. Well, I got 2 I got to deal with. When my mom was alive, I had 3. All right. So, I mean, she ran hers on there because it was easy and she didn't have to pay some guy, you know, $300 to do a simple I'm retired and I get Social Security return.
Well, I'm going back. I don't want to say how far I'm going back, but you used to actually get the full thing in the mail.
Right.
Where it would have all the tables, it would have all the form EZ.
Oh, yeah, you don't get that anymore.
The form EZ, the form this, the form that. You get this big thing. It had to be what? 20 pages, maybe? 25?
Oh, yeah, I used to get them.
Every table was in there. And the only thing you had to do is if you needed some of the extra pages, they'd all be at the post office.
Right, exactly.
And there'd be a big, long line if you needed, like, something for a capital gains, it'd be at the post office. You had to go get that form. Because, you know, there was no online or anything. But we had all these different brackets. There was a bracket every couple thousand bucks. I mean, how many brackets do we have? Like 15, or it was some huge number.
It was a pain in the butt too.
But you know what? That's why I say this, and people think I'm like, you know, some pinko or something, but I'm not. The biggest benefactor by inflation is the government.
You know, absolutely.
Because if you went from, let's say, for instance, back when I was doing this stuff, if you started out in 1974, okay, making $15,000 a year, okay, and by 1982, when we had the money, all the inflation that whole way through there, we're doing 10-12% a year, for God's sake. The prices probably have close to, I'm going to say, they're up 75-80%. All right, so let's say your taxes or your income was also up 70-80% over that 7-8 year period. You think you're even? You're not.
Because
it was, if you made 16 grand.
You got bracket jammed.
Yeah, if you made 16 grand, you'd be, it was like something like, your tax would be like $1,200 plus 12%. Then once you got to 18 grand, it was something plus 15% or something like that. And it was, and we went for a long time, starting with really Reagan and some other people, we went down to only like a couple of tax brackets. Well, we're way up again in the tax brackets.
Oh, Chief, when I was younger, and I used to get those packets in the mail like everybody else, right, with all the tax forms every year. I'll tell you what, there were a couple of times that, you know, I got a raise, right, and you'd look at this and you go, I just gave the majority of that to blankety blanking government.
Well, here's where I'm going. I mean, how sinister these elected officials are. And I'm being nice the day after. Nation's birthday, aren't I? We think we're out of this stuff. No, we're not. Because I'm going to say that a lot of people that we know, Carl, and a lot of people we're talking about are somewhere in this 40 grand range, right, is what they're making. And a lot of your service industries, a lot of your stuff. But anyway, 40 grand translates to $20 an hour. So we know people are making less than that. But say say you're making 40, 42 grand before any of this crap started in 2020, right? Now all of a sudden you've got this 20-25% raise where you think you're keeping up. Okay, well now you're making 50, 52. Well, your tax rate just went from 12% to 22.
Right.
There's a massive, right? I wonder how many people could, I mean, I knew the numbers were somewhere here. Your numbers, right where the, I'll say the sweet spot is for what huge percentage of Americans. We're talking about when the median income is what, probably 40, 41? So like it's right here. So if you goose that person 25%, you've goosed their tax rate on their additional 25% by 10%.
Right.
So they're not even close to being even. Not to mention state and all the other stuff that goes with it.
Right.
But we don't see. I don't get why the stuff we talk about is nowhere anywhere near on national news. This used to be back in those days. I mean, you actually had people that would like tell the truth on a regular news show. When I say tell the truth, it's not like they're lying. They just don't even mention it.
I have no idea.
And I don't care if it's Fox or who it is. Nobody will sit there and go, hey, wait a minute. You know, we got this thing going here. Whoever is president, by the way, you just goosed everybody 10%. Doesn't anybody even know it or realize it? I mean, I guess people do, but what are you supposed to do? Put a sandwich sign on and run down the block? I mean, what good does that do? You're totally powerless in this whole mess. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, by the way, we only have a few minutes. Do you understand? I just like people to understand how this can happen. If Biden were to somehow bow out, and I'm not, this is totally apolitical. There were like three different scenarios of what could happen last night. And I first of all, I'm assuming the person, what the hell they were talking about, maybe they didn't. It was if he just says he's not running and he's going to finish out his term right now, okay. I think the guy said the delegates go to Harris, but they don't. They get pushed to Harris, but they're not required to vote for her even on the first ballot. I think that's what they said. And they said now if he resigns the presidency now, which I don't think. Again, I'm just.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, but right. I'm saying she becomes president, and then but then after the convention, even if he's nominated, then he says he's not running. That's another whole brand of ball. I mean, how many? Do you have any idea how many different iterations of this there are? I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of curious.
Well, my understanding. Okay, so there's the internals of the party machinery are up to them. Okay, there isn't a law. You're not even entitled to a fair contest in terms of who's actually on the ballot within a political party. A lot of people don't understand this. It's the primaries are called political preference primaries legally. You know, it's not a primary. It's a preference, which is this whole thing about delegates. Okay, in the first round, they're supposed to be bound. You know, okay, that's because of a party rule. It's not a law that happened.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the, you know, basically what it comes down to is that at the convention, the political party can change the rule book. In fact, the first thing they have to do, and I was on the Libertarian EC, so I know how it worked within the Libertarian Party. The first thing you do, it's like any other Robert's Rules of Order thing. The first thing you do is you adopt an organizing resolution for the meeting. All right, so they can change those rules at that point, when the convention opens. Now, are they likely to? Well, that's a different question. But legally, can they do that? The answer is yes. Where there is an issue is with the money that the committee has raised, because that's under federal law. That's under the FEC.
Okay, and that's another thing that's kind of different. Well, actually, somebody lobbed the question out that if he were to say, I'm not running now, you have time to run a nationwide primary and let anybody else in.
In theory, I don't know how the blankety blank you would actually manage.
But here's
to
what
do
I was mentioning this last week, and you probably know more about it than me. But I read this big long thing maybe 3-4 years ago. It had to do with the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are very different in a couple of ways. Well, I'm not just talking about the policies, but people send in. I'm like, if I'm a Republican, I'm liable to send money into the Republican National Committee, just as. The party raises a lot of the, quote, scratch. That's money.
Yes.
But the Democrat, a lot of what Biden has raised is for him. I mean, if people want to give him money, they give him money. They don't send it to the Democratic National Committee. So
that's correct.
Now, so there's a big difference there. For instance, if he were to bail versus Trump bail, in terms of who the money's destined to, is it now? I don't know what difference that makes, but. The party can't take Biden's money.
Okay, well, this is what I was about to explain.
So I did it poorly, so help me out.
All right, so if, let's say that Biden says, I'm not running. All right. There's his committee, his political committee has a huge chunk of cash.
Yeah, it's like $100-some million, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
He can't give that to the next successor candidate. He cannot do that.
I thought he could. I thought he could create a pact with it.
He can give it to the Democratic National Committee.
Okay.
All right. So he can give it.
Because it wasn't set up as a pact. It's set up just for him.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But legally, if he was to, if they were to say, well, now Gavin Newsom is the candidate, okay? His committee can only give Newsom's committee, the personal maximum, which of course is nothing, yeah. Right, by comparison.
It's like 10 grand or something,
it's like $3,000.
Okay, all right.
It's very little. So obviously that is not a desirable situation.
Now, how's that different? Well, how's that different than when Rastenkowski used to give money to people who, what he set his up as was the Rastenkowski PAC, Political Action Committee.
So right. Now
he could give it to anybody he wanted, right?
Well, a PAC though cannot coordinate with the campaign.
Right.
Well, in theory. Right. All right. We all know they cheat, but the theory is they can't do that. So what Biden's committee can do is, because you know this happens all the time, you close out a campaign, you've got some money left after you get done paying, you know, all your stuff. What the committee can do is give all of it to the party's committee.
Really?
Yes. So he can transfer. Now he can also transfer it to nonprofit organizations and things like that. He cannot use any of it to enrich any person. All right, so he personally can't take the cash. That's illegal. And he's subject to campaign limits if it's given to any individual committee for somebody who's running. So he can't do that either. He can't give it to whoever the successor nominee is. But what he can do is give it all to the DNC.
Okay.
All right, and there's no problem with doing that. So the thing is, he can't control what the DNC does with it after he does that. All right, because it's gone. He doesn't control it anymore. So that's kind of the yin and yang on this when it comes to, you know, all the stuff that goes on within the machinery. So yeah, there's some grinding going on in terms of what, you know, what people are thinking.
Well, maybe we can
regard.
We got a S&P futures are unchanged after being down 60, up 70. Now we're unchanged. NASDAQ futures are up 5. So whatever this number came out to, it turned out to be nothing here. You know, like a big zippo.
You know, things are what they are, right?
Oh, God. Well, we'll see you on Tuesday, buddy. Have a nice weekend. You guys got good weather? We're actually pretty nice here.
Yeah, we're, it was hotter than blazes yesterday, but it's actually cooling down a little bit. I think we're going to get some rain later on, and yeah, not bad.
Well, yesterday was not that hot, but it was so humid, and there wasn't a breath of wind. It's like, this Chicago? This is like New Orleans, for God's sake.
You know, it was funny because here it was extremely hot, but it wasn't extremely humid.
Really?
The humidity was reasonable. So, I mean, it was nasty, but it was better than it would have been if it had been, you know, like hot and sticky like Florida or something.
Was this guy a relative of yours? Vatican excommunicates Carlo Maria Vigano.
No. Oh, Vigano? Yeah, that's
former ambassador to the U.S. for refusing to recognize the Pope. He doesn't like this Pope, so the Pope just tossed him.
Vigano's been railing about the anti-Pope for a long time.
He calls him, this Pope a servant of Satan. That's a little harsh.
He finally got him mad enough to throw him out.
On that note, S&P futures down a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 7. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.